This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting on demand from Buffalo, New York, where today is it Saturday? It's Saturday. It's an early episode of WrestleNomics Radio. Saturday, April 3rd, 2021. And today on the program, we're going to talk about how WWE NXT announced that it has a new deal, and also that's moving to Tuesday. And Ring of Honor Chief Operating Officer Joe Koff has quantified Ring of Honor's viewership sort of roughly in a wide range. WWE has a new deal with DraftKings. WWE has announced that the Q1 earnings report will happen on April 22nd, a WrestleNomics holiday is on the horizon. WrestleMania tickets are still available at Ticketmaster. We'll talk a lot, as we always do, about viewership. Is the female viewership for AEW on the decline? What about Impact Wrestling? What about the rest of the wrestling viewership world? And does, like you think it might, does viewership increase on the road to WrestleMania? All that and more, but first. This TV viewership update is, as always, brought to you by the WrestleNomics viewership sheet, which you can get access to at patreon.com/WrestleNomics. And this week, we even have some Impact Wrestling quarter-hour viewership for January, February, and the first half of March that is also available for patrons, again, at patreon.com/WrestleNomics. More than 14,000 data points, the massive data set that I use to continuously update and track viewership across WWE programs, AEW, and Impact Wrestling. WWE SmackDown on Fox last week Friday, 2.2 million viewers, doing pretty well in the range of what it usually does, but young viewers between the ages of 18 to 34 were up a little bit higher than usual. Then WWE Raw on Monday, viewed by 1.7 million viewers on the USA Network, down slightly from what it usually does in terms of total viewership. In fact, younger viewers made up a larger proportion of the audience than usual, and older viewers were actually down here on the road to WrestleMania. AEW Dynamite on Wednesday night, 700,000 viewers, about 335,000 of those in the key demo of 18 to 49, the lowest in both of those categories since January 6th. A day that there was tremendous news viewership. And NXT, less than 50,000 viewers behind at 654,000. And even creeping up on AEW in the demo was NXT, with about 270,000 viewers between the ages of 18 to 49. Impact Wrestling on Access on its final Tuesday night, 149,000 viewers, after some initial panic over an erroneous report about what the Impact might have done in viewership. And in the overnights, SmackDown appears to have done its usual roughly 2 million viewers. We'll get a final number, as we usually do, on Monday. And now, we will be joined by a correspondent of the WrestleNomics network of people, once again, to guide us through the dark and murky tunnel that is professional wrestling business. Our friend Chris Gullo, broadcasting not from, we need to do a correction from last week, not broadcasting from Niagara Falls. I am of course broadcasting from Buffalo, New York, but he is broadcasting from the legendary town city of North Tonawanda.
Yeah, I didn't even catch it last week either. I was just like, oh yeah, yeah, I'm in Niagara Falls, I guess. You know, so, but you know, I'm happy to be back, and we have a real fun show here with some topics here, and we can get right into it, Brandon. We kind of talked about it last week, and now it's official. WWE will move NXT to Tuesday nights beginning April 13th on the USA Network.
They will. Then we will enter the era no longer. Will we be in the Wednesday Night Wars era? We will be in the era of wrestling 5 nights a week, which in this media environment has never happened. Maybe in the territories there were an aggregation of five nights of wrestling across the country in some markets or something like that, but not in this era of cable TV and so forth. Access is in about half the cable homes, which is what Impact is on. As we discussed last week, Impact is going to be moving to Thursday to get the hell out of the way of NXT. But yeah, we got the press release earlier this week that WWE and NXT have announced their renewal of their contract with NBC Universal, the parent company of the USA Network. So it's a multi-year deal, and they announced this in conjunction with the announcement of the move to Tuesday. So there's not the move that you have to focus on. We want to show you that we got a new deal, and we have no idea what the value of that deal is at this point. I've been asking some people, and some people have been asking some other people, but I have not heard any insight on what the value of this deal was. The current value, so this the current TV deal, which started, as everybody probably remembers, in September 2019. NXT started 2 weeks ahead of AEW in those funny weeks there, where NXT had its first hour on the network, I think, and then the second hour on USA or vice versa. But anyway, and then in October, they started to go head to head. But it was a 2-year deal, and that is expiring this coming September. And we never got a clear idea about what the value of the NXT TV deal was or is. There were various reports from Dave Meltzer and from stock analysts, including Guggenheim. There were other estimates that were made by JP Morgan. We've heard everything from $30 million a year to $50 million a year to $60 million a year to $70 million a year to $50 to $100 million a year. And I have no idea what to think. When I've made some charts in the past, I've put it at $40,000 because I don't know, that puts it in the ballpark of what AEW is worth on an average annual basis. Tony Khan has made it pretty clear that that the deal with WarnerMedia / Turner for AEW is worth $44 million per year, or $175 over the course of the deal. So NXT has a multi-year deal. The big unanswered question here is, did NXT get an increase in its TV rights fees, a lateral movement, or a downgrade? I have no idea. And I think it's interesting to think about how NXT's viewership that it's had to show this is the viewership that we can deliver. Granted, we're going against the AEW, but here's the viewership that we delivered. And it wasn't as good as AEW's viewership. It wasn't ranked as highly. They do about 600,000 viewers, give or take, these days. They do about a 0.14 or so in the key demo, which comes out to something like around 200,000 viewers, which is, I think their median rank on Wednesday night is something like in the 40s. AEW has been able to finish in the top 10 pretty often on a median basis. So it's really curious to me, you know, how does a program that performs like that, what kind of value can a program like that attract? I just don't know. And I guess I feel that at the way that things are right now, I think Raw and SmackDown are still in a position where they're probably going to be able to justify some sort of increase in TV rights fees in 2024. And I think AEW is arguably way undervalued. And but I just don't know where NXT falls in the spectrum of value for TV rights fees. Maybe we'll hear something about it eventually, but I don't know. We went 2 years without hearing anything about it for this round, so we'll see.
Well, and I know we talked last week about, you know, the NFL deal included Amazon Prime, and I honestly, in a thought in my head, was wondering if they would try to make NXT a Peacock exclusive, and that would have kind of drawn some more people to getting Peacock and giving them, you know, a live sports, you know, in an aspect streaming thing every week. And obviously they're staying with USA. And I mean, it looks like that, you know, I mean, USA, I don't know off the top of my hand, Brandon, obviously, you know more, but I think that performs probably the better than most shows.
NXT still performs pretty well. I mean, they're in the top 50, and that's pretty good for a cable program. And in non-COVID times. It's live. I think it's still live now. But as far as going on Peacock, I think if I'm WWE, I don't want NXT to be exclusively on Peacock. The reach, as much as Triple H in the media conference call that we both just listened to before we sat down to record this, as much as Triple H and WWE executives, you know, spin how great the reach is for Peacock and then the notion that, yeah, this is going to be in, you know, dozens of millions of U.S. homes versus, you know, the network is only in maybe at best 2 million homes worldwide. The USA network is still in about 80 million homes. So there's something like 120 million homes in the U.S. USA network is still in 80 million of them. Peacock is maybe in 30 some odd million of them. People aren't really in the habit of using Peacock yet. Maybe someday, maybe in a future round of negotiations, maybe that's something that makes sense, but I don't think that makes sense for, at least for WWE right now. And maybe NBC Universal would like to have that, more attention to Peacock, but you still have, I don't know, you probably have some good advertising to sell with having NXT on the network. I don't know if it's more valuable or not with Peacock. You're certainly going to get a larger audience, I think, if you have it on the USA network. I think the viewership for NXT on Peacock would be substantially lower. We would never know because we would probably never get numbers on it, but I think it would result in NXT becoming less viewed and becoming less popular at this point. Maybe it makes sense at a future time, but not right now, I think.
Not sure if this is their steady Tuesday night lineup, but right now it's just reruns of Law & Order SVU, so it's not like they're replacing a hot commodity in that time slot.
Yeah, and that's like all they play in primetime on USA Network when they're not playing wrestling, basically, is reruns of SVU, which I've been told is a very profitable airing because they already own this content. It costs them nothing to produce it. They just have to play it and sell advertising against it. Probably a lot of P50 plus viewership there.
Well, they're also doing a new Law & Order Organized Crime series, which I think, I could be wrong, is a Peacock exclusive, but I could be wrong.
One thing that's interesting, I think, in the course of the ones that it wars for the last 2 years is the move from the network to USA resulted in NXT no longer having its live or first run airing on Wednesday night on the network. Obviously, they didn't want to, they're not going to, USA is not going to buy NXT to have it simulcast on the W network. But that also resulted, that affected everyone globally. So you had all your international fans who were used to watching NXT first run on Wednesday night now no longer had a way to do that. And it has trickled out in terms of, NXT most recently is now on some sort of cable, I think cable station through Rogers. And maybe that's happening in the UK too. I don't know. I'm sure there are listeners who are yelling because I don't know what the networks are, but I think it really did disrupt the habitual viewing that was probably happening internationally, which sort of trickles down to less hype and less social media buzz about NXT that probably didn't help when in the other case, internationally with AEW, they are distributing that through Fight for everybody if you don't have a carrier in your region. So I think that's sort of an underrated story in the Wednesday Night Wars is it sort of, I think it kind of disengaged international fans and gave them a break point and just maybe contributed to a little less buzz than there would have been otherwise.
Before we move on, any final thoughts on this? I mean, obviously we talked a little bit about it last week. I think it's a good move on all parties. It's a good move for, it seems like USA because they're not, it's not like it's replacing anything substantial. It's a good move for WWE and it's a good move for AEW. It really honestly should, you think on paper, there should be a ratings increase for both products.
Yeah. I what was I looking at? I was looking at the quarter hours for NXT and for AEW. Yeah, I think this will be good for everybody. But the question is, how much will viewership increase for AEW and NXT now that they're not being opposed by another popular wrestling program? I think, so what I looked at was, let's take the the peak, or not the peak, or maybe the second highest quarter hour viewership for either AEW or NXT, and compare that to the lowest quarter hour for that same program. Why the second highest? Because the first 15 minutes are often the most viewed quarter hour of the program because they get a lead in. I think there's just a lot of leftover viewers who are watching Law and Order, who have no intention of watching wrestling, who just haven't tuned out yet. So I take the second highest, and what I see, so I guess what I'm trying to measure there is how many viewers are sort of in this flux state where they're in or they're out, whether it's to look at the other wrestling program or something else on TV. And I think it's going to be a little bit higher for NXT, which gels with other things that we've seen where I haven't really looked at any of this DVR data, but I hear, the Observer and the Torch report that, DVR viewing for NXT is higher by percentage than it is for AEW. I think we saw that too in September where both programs were preempted to different nights. So anyway, what I would expect AEW to increase its viewership by about 15-20%, I guess. And I would expect maybe NXT to increase its viewership by about 20-25%, just because I think NXT has more to gain by percentage here because people have more so picked AEW over NXT rather than the other way around. So there are more people who are choosing other things rather than watching NXT live same day, which is the numbers that we look at and talk about most often is live same day. So yeah, I would look for on Tuesday night NXT to maybe do 700 or 600 or 800,000 viewers rather than 600 or something like that. I would look for AEW doing only about 700,000 here, which I think we'll talk about more in a little bit, but maybe doing something more like 800,000, maybe getting into the 900,000s more often.
All right, so we're going to change pace a little bit here, and we're actually going to go to Ring of Honor, which is something not always discussed, but Ring of Honor CEO Joe Coffey was actually interviewed on the ROH Strong podcast, and he had some interesting things to say about the viewership of Ring of Honor, and here's a quote that he says, "We are much higher than people give us credit. There are probably 300,000 to 400,000, sometimes 500,000 households that watch Ring of Honor every week." He also mentioned in that interview as well that they were zoning in on a single network TV deal, and then that with the pandemic happened, that's not something that right now is in the works, but it's something they could possibly revisit. Which, when I was on this show the first time with you a while back, a couple years ago, I brought up the fact that they're not on the YES Network is just mind blowing.
Sinclair owns the YES Network now.
That's yes, and all the YES Network shows is Yankees games and the Michael Kay show. There's nothing else. There's all these syndicated sports trivia, but there's space there for them to be.
Yeah. And in fact, let's throw it to that clip now.
So we have tremendous support from our own company, because we believe that the more people can see it, the more people will enjoy it. Yes, we are a little bit challenged by the fact that we don't have a single destination. And one of the things pre-COVID was we were actually exploring that to have a single night, and it's back on the drawing boards, but we have to, we have to think about all of that again. But, interestingly enough, and I see the ratings and the audience figures of my competitors and some of the other ones that have single location destinations. And while we may not be as high in reach as those stations, we are surprisingly much higher than people give us credit for. There are probably 300,000 to 400,000, maybe sometimes 500,000 households. So we'll consider those people 18 plus or 2 plus, depending on how you want to define that for broadcasting terms, that watch Ring of Honor every week. It's a big number.
Yeah, that is.
It's a big number. I mean, when you combine all of the wrestling viewing, it's big. It's sizable. Is it as big? Again, it's over different channels, over different nights. But there's real viewing going on. And we go back to what we started with originally. Of all the wrestling that's presented that way, Ring of Honor is the most authentic professional wrestling presented?
So 500,000 households is sometimes, he says, 300 to 400, sometimes 500 households watching Ring of Honor. That would put it above Impact Wrestling, but below NXT in the hierarchy. That just doesn't reflect the kind of buzz in Google web search, I guess, that I see related to these products. I see Impact Wrestling still getting way more. Maybe that's just got to do with Impact Wrestling having this long legacy of being on a high reach platform, Spike TV, for all those years. You know, Ring of Honor and Impact are about the same age, right? They both started in 2002, back when I was trading VHS tapes. But it would surprise me, I guess, if that's really the number. There was an article from a 2016 article, so this is now a five-year-old article, from Media Village that said, quote, Sinclair's station lineup covers more than 41 million households. That would put it on par with Access, in fact. Or 39% of all U.S. TV households. Nielsen estimates that more than 500,000 households watch Ring of Honor each week. I asked Lavi about this, Lavi Margolin, who does the Business of the Business podcast and follows Ring of Honor pretty closely. And he thinks that they probably could aggregate all of their station viewership together. I wonder if they in fact do and if they are tracking that. But yeah, the one thing that he brings up in this interview on the Ring of Honor Strong podcast is how they don't have a single point of distribution here. It's on various time slots across various networks. So it's not something that I think that really diminishes at least the social media buzz that could be around that program, because not everybody is watching it at the same time. Right. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, he's just saying a number and there's no real data. I would be fascinated to see the data. I would be fascinated to see how much they are, in fact, tracking the data across all of their different networks and time slots.
I mean, if that is the case, if it's factual, I mean, it is impressive, because I also think they have a good amount of base that doesn't watch it on the regular TV and watch it through the Stadium Channel streaming service. It is on, like, it's on Pluto, but I think it's on a couple other of those free, look at all these streaming networks we have, sites, and I know Ring of Honor streams their show weekly on Stadium. So, I mean, if all of it's true, it's impressive, but I don't know, like, I just, maybe like you said, the Google Trends. What I've noticed too with Impact and Ring of Honor is you'll see Impact like sharing a lot of the videos and stuff like that. I seem to get a lot of like what's going on in Ring of Honor from the talents. And I follow Ring of Honor as well on social media, but it seems to be the talents when they share stuff. That's kind of how I get to see things, whether it's like a Danhausen or Dalton Castle or Shane Taylor. Like I'm more than what they're sharing.
I would suggest that that's an investment thing. Sinclair has always seemed to be very low risk and conservative about investing or taking any sort of financial risk in Ring of Honor. It goes back to, you know, I remember when the Jim Ross podcast had just come out many years ago, and every time he brought up Ring of Honor, he talked about the production values. And but I think, you know, Impact has done a very good job with its social media. Impact and AEW social media numbers. AEW is at a disadvantage because it's a newer brand that started its social media accounts only very recently relative to Impact. But Impact and AEW are neck and neck on a lot of social media metrics. I just pulled up the Google Trends, and you know, we've got Ring of Honor. Let's see. Over the last 12 months, we got Ring of Honor at a 10. This is just the United States, too. The gap would probably be even larger if we went global. But Ring of Honor is more so a U.S. brand than it is distributed globally versus Impact. So Ring of Honor at a 10, and Impact at a 46 web search in the United States last 12 months. So Impact more than quadrupling searches for Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
So there's that.
All right. We will move on back to Stamford, Connecticut, to the land of WWE. And an interesting deal was announced this week, Brandon, a partnership with DraftKings. Where I believe they're going to be launching a free to play pools that will actually launch for WrestleMania.
Yes, I don't know what to make of this. I know that WWE is been an investor in DraftKings. I don't know if they still are, but that's something that we've seen in the SEC filings. These free-to-play pools. Have you ever? Do you know what this is? Is this like a football pool
with your friends? It's almost like, you know, they're going to, hey, sign up, and I think they give away like a prize, but you have to be like the best out of probably hundreds of thousands of people that are going to enter this. And it's really to get kind of people hooked into there where they start playing the actual pay to play. I mean, one of the big things DraftKings did back in the day was to give you like a free $5 credit, or they'll match whatever you put in up to $100. That's what they used to do. I'm not sure if they still do it, but I tried it once, did it, matched it up to $100, played fantasy football a couple weeks, broke even, and then just called it a day. I never lost any money, but I was like, I'm not a big gambler. But the whole aspect of betting on wrestling, and that's probably why it's going to be just a free to play thing, because betting on wrestling is some gray area there. But I know it's been done.
I've done it.
They put lines out there all the time, like who will win the Royal Rumble and stuff like that. And WWE did a fantasy game years ago, too.
Okay. I believe Sportico reported on it that they're not gambling, they're not offering bets on match results. But I haven't done it in a while. I started this like many years ago, and I've probably made like maybe 10 bets on WWE pay-per-view matches. They would always do pay-per-view. Everybody knows, you know, they put out the lines for every pay-per-view, the favorites and the underdogs and so forth. And that often seems to be basically spoilers, because those are, you know, based on the betting lines, those are often correct. So I've never lost a bet in my 10 bets, because I would always like give me the most obvious match here. But now, so I did this through a website called Five Dimes, which is now, I think, folding or something. And I need to recover my balance. So they sent me a postcard a while back. I have until September 30th to recover my balance. So I better do that soon. It's been on my desk here, so I need to do that. But I don't know. What is this worth? I have no idea. I imagine it'll go under the consumer product licensing line of revenue for WWE. If WWE is still an investor in DraftKings, obviously it's in their interest to promote that brand. And I think there's a fair amount of interest in doing some sort of gaming or gambling thing with WWE. That seems to be something that the people in the sports business world are excited about and think there are opportunities around. I'm curious, like, why not start offering bets on the match results? I wonder if they're hesitant or if they think there's some sort of liability around the matches being a work, and maybe smart money coming in and, you know, working everybody.
Well, it's because DraftKings has official deals too with sports like leagues. And where like you can go to like a Bodog or something like that, and you can bet on, you know, will Brock Lesnar be in the Royal Rumble, where those aren't officially licensed with the sports leagues and all that. DraftKings, I believe, I mean, it's either DraftKings or another one. I mean, there's an NFL deal and then a Major League Baseball deal. I mean, there's deals they have. And I think because wrestling isn't technically sports, allowing that kind of then gets people going, well, okay, is this on the up and up? And I think it just causes unnecessary attention from probably people that would investigate if everything is on the up and up with the gambling on the wrestling side of things.
I've reordered our topics, as you may have noticed.
Okay. All right. Yes. I have seen that here now. All right. So we will move on to another topic here with WWE, and the quarter one earnings report will be announced for April 22nd. So a couple weeks after me, we'll kind of get an aspect of what the first quarter entailed for WWE.
Mm-hmm. And do you know what the beginning date and the end date of the first quarter are, Chris Gull?
And I do not have that on top. I know you, I think you've sent me something with that, but I do not have that.
Or Q1. Well, think about it. Q1, first quarter of the year. How many months is that?
Okay, yes. So that would probably be January until March, I would imagine. Yes, right? 3 months.
Beginning of January through the end of March. Yep.
I just know other business year, like some other businesses do their financial years different. I used to work at a company where their financial year started in November. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In fact, WWE used to have its fiscal year begin in April, They stopped doing that in 2006, I think, though. They transitioned in 2007 to a calendar year, fiscal year. So this will not have any WrestleMania information in it. This will, again, be on April 22nd, the Q1 earnings report, or as some of us in the business call it, the quarterly WrestleNomics holiday. It's now, unlike in the Berrios era, it's not in the middle of the day as the market is actually trading. It is after the market closes. They release the information. The market closes, I think, 4:30 p.m. And they release the information about 4:30 or so. Like, they really cut it close these days. And then they'll do the conference call at 5 p.m. So I don't necessarily have to take the day off of work anymore. I can just, you know, go home at the end of the day and get caught up on this. But what will we learn from it? First of all, it is now April 3rd as we record this, and WWE has not released its proxy statement. It has not released its Form 14A. Can you believe that? They have not released the proxy statement. Aren't you outraged, Chris Golo? In every single year, going back the last 10 years and more, I think, they have released their proxy statement in the month of March. And often very early in the month of March. And I marked my calendar. I have a Google calendar, and I marked a long strip where I thought, you know, okay, based on where the date that it was released in previous years, it's going to be released sometime in this range of dates. And that range of dates is now weeks in the past. It is now April 3rd. March is over with, and no proxy statement. This I have politely emailed the folks at WWE Investor Relations. I have CC'd the folks at Media Relations because they want to deal with me and not Investor Relations. That's okay. And I've gotten no reply yet. They must be busy, though. I know it's WrestleMania season, so I'm sure they're extremely busy. But usually the proxy statement comes out at this time, and it has not come out at this time. And this is very discomforting for people, well, for me mainly. What is a proxy statement? I know you all probably know this, but a proxy statement is basically, we get a lot of information about executive compensation, most especially, is the most interesting part of that. WWE, I think this is sort of standard for publicly traded companies, is you have top five officers, which I think is just based on compensation, and they report what a big compensation breakdown table for what everybody was paid. And there's information about ownership in there too. That's interesting. The biggest owners are always listed, which include financial institutions. And of course, Vince McMahon and Stephanie owns a large portion of shares also. So it's just a surprise that has not come out yet. And I don't know what the deal is. And I don't really know what the requirement is as far as, is there a time limit at which one has to release the proxy statement? Is this a COVID delay? I don't know, but I'm sure everyone is upset about this. So we will keep you updated.
Possibly a delay with all the deals that have happened, honestly, within the last few months. So of course, I know you're excited for that day, April 22nd. And we'll get some information, I think even more further information about Peacock and you know, that deal and all these other deals that have kind of made around this time right as March ended. So that should be pretty interesting.
Yeah, we probably won't get any information about that. But what we will get is
Christine, I mean, you have to be honest with the stock investors of, hey, this is what we got for the first quarter from Peacock, you know.
They'll report. So WWE is a publicly traded company, and they – I don't know the rules, but they probably have to report, you know, a breakdown of their finances, but they don't report details of particular deals. Okay. Sometimes that gets leaked into the media. And, you know, for example, we know that the Peacock deal is worth $1 billion over 5 years, but that's because of the Wall Street Journal and the Sports Business Journal reporting that. Now, they're probably getting that information from either or both of WWE and NBC Universal. But that is not that's not something that WWE reports publicly or is required to report publicly. And they probably don't even want to do that because they don't want to they could, but they don't want to create a standard of, oh, OK, you're reporting this, so why aren't you reporting this? So but anyway, we will get Christina Salen, who's the WWE chief financial officer and has been since August. she said on the last call, which was for Q4, which is in February, this is when this was communicated, that the biggest period, the biggest quarter for revenue related to the Peacock deal will be Q1 because of the transfer of IP and of user data or something like that. So I don't know if that's because there's some sort of big upfront bonus at the beginning or if there's some sort of payment for costs that are related to transitioning this. I mean, there was no automatic migration, so I don't know what's going on here. But that's, I need to sit down and before April 22nd, and I will do an estimate of what each line of business will do. Will be my prediction slash estimate. And so I would expect, you know, usually what happens is in these TV deals is the standard thing is each year you get paid the same amount per episode or something like that. And then once that first year is up, let's say it's a 5-year deal like this Peacock deal is, or like the Raw and SmackDown deals are, once that first year is up, then you get a 10% increase per episode and so on for each year. And that's when we talk about these guaranteed escalating TV rights fees or broadcast or media rights fees, that's an example of what we're talking about. Now, I don't know for a fact that there's 10% escalators in any of these deals, but that's my, you know, that's a decent estimate, I think. So it's surprising that the first quarter of this Peacock deal will be the biggest revenue quarter. So I don't know what the reasoning is there exactly, other than the sort of vague details that were given on the conference call last time. So that's something that I'll consider when I sit down with an Excel spreadsheet and do the math. What else will we learn? We'll get some more information about what the media operating expenses are to produce core content, or to the media operating expenses will encompass all media, which would include TV production of Raw and SmackDown, NXT, of reality television shows. If that happened in Q1, I don't really remember, but anything related to the W Network is included in that. Also, any media operating expenses related to advertising and sponsorships, etc. But what we found last time was that Thunderdome appears to be more expensive than the expense related to producing Raw and SmackDown per episode in the pre-COVID touring days of Raw and SmackDown. So we'll get probably some affirmation, or I mean, as much was said by W executives on the conference call confirming that, but we'll get some additional information, get some, you know, an additional data point to look at related to that. I think it'll be really interesting to see, are they going to give a Q1 update on average paid subscribers or anything like that? Since we're now in this interregnum, this overlap period, which will still be going on at the very end of the quarter on March 31st, from March 18th until April 4th, the W Network and Peacock will both be providing access to W Network content. So there's probably a lot of people who are, you know, as of March 18th, who have access to Peacock and canceled or didn't renew their subscription. So that'll be really interesting. And then there's, I think, just a really big question that, you know, about how an investor or analyst or a wrestling pundit is going to evaluate the success of any of this content or any of this value that WWE is providing to Peacock. Are we going to get any performance type metric related to Peacock? Are we going to get an idea of what the viewership of WWE pay-per-view content is on the network? I would be mildly surprised if NBC Universal lets WWE report that kind of information. This is a manual migration. This is not an automatic migration. So I don't know how you can say WWE provided X number of subscribers to Peacock when it's a manual migration. And when you've got a lot of households that just got automatic access because they were Comcast customers, for example, mm-hmm. So they automatically got access to Peacock. And I think that's the biggest reason, I would guess, for the manual migration, because if you automatically migrated all the W Network users, you would end up double billing some people for the same access. Essentially, if you turned every W Network subscriber into a Peacock subscriber, unless you could sort the Comcast customers from the non Comcast customers, you would you'd be giving some people two Comcast or two Peacock subscriptions, probably a lot of them without realizing it, and you'd probably cause a lot of customer service issues that way. But it'll be interesting to see what happens. Will there be questions too to get really deep in the weeds here. Will there be questions too about a stock buyback program that was paused at the beginning of the pandemic? Any news on whether or not WWE is going to resume that stock buyback program? because are you familiar with stock buyback programs, Chris Gullo?
A little bit, the bare knowledge, but I'm just finally getting into stocks as a 33 year old man. I'm just kind of starting to look at some stocks in some certain areas and stuff, and really having conversations with other people I know. So,
what are you going to buy? Bitcoin?
No, not Bitcoin. A lot of growers stocks are trending up, but also just looking for really steady stuff, so like Vanguard International, stuff like that, like very steady.
Vanguard, an investor in WWE, but they're one of the biggest mutual fund firms.
Yeah, mutual, yeah.
So, stock buyback program is basically when a company buys its own shares, thus increasing the demand for the shares, thus increasing the price of the stock. It's a way for companies to increase shareholder value. WWE has tons of cash on hand. WWE's free cash flow is really, really high. I think it's the highest it's ever been. So why not, from a purely capitalist standpoint, why are they not resuming the stock buyback program? I've heard that there's a lot of internal debates about whether or not they should resume the stock buyback program. Maybe it's a Vince McMahon thing where he doesn't want to do it for some reason. But I can imagine there being some investors wishing that they would resume that program. I'm sure there'll be other stuff, but we'll talk about it more as April 22nd, the first of four. Well, I guess it's really the second, but the next quarterly WrestleNomics holiday, we will talk about it more as it approaches.
All right. Moving on here. As we are recording this, we are a week from WrestleMania, two nights in Raymond James Stadium. And you have an update on WrestleMania tickets. Isn't that right, Brandon?
I guess. So I was told by somebody this morning that WrestleMania is now really close to being sold out, or at least close enough to being called a sellout, whatever that means. If you look at Ticketmaster, though, there still appear to be a number of tickets available. It looks like there's, at least as of Thursday night, there were about 1,000 tickets available for both Saturday and Sunday. I don't know. We'll see. I guess, you know, again, this is not a Q1 thing, but this is a Q2 thing because this is in April, and Q2 report doesn't happen until the summer, July or August. So we'll get some idea probably in the past. In non-COVID years, and this is different, but in non-COVID years, WWE has always reported the average and the total number of tickets sold in North America and internationally. So I would think in Q2, these two WrestleMania events are liable to be the only events with paid fans there. So we'll probably get some information in July or August about how many fans were there and were paying, probably rounded to the nearest 100 or something. So we'll see. I could see as well WWE giving away a lot of tickets to first responders and hospital workers. That was something that happened for the Super Bowl, sort of rolling them out there and waving as Hulk Hogan and Titus O'Neil come out and introduce the event. It's interesting. The Andre the Giant Battle Royal has been announced for SmackDown on the Friday rather than being a part of the event. I think they're really looking at the first thing that gets to be in front of fans is a big deal, and they don't just want it to be a battle royal or something, or they don't want to have to include that. I don't think there's going to be any pre-show matches.
No.
They're going to probably let this thing kick off with Real American.
I do.
Or maybe the Nigerian drum fight match.
Maybe The ticket sales thing has been interesting to me because this week there was a few different independent shows that are running during that week that were kind of discussing that they currently have low ticket sales. So and I had a feeling this was going to happen, and it's one of the reasons why I will not be in Tampa Bay. COVID was the biggest reason, but because I didn't know if I would have the vaccine by then. Now I do.
Have you had two doses? One dose or two?
Second dose on the 17th. So second dose on the 17th.
Of this month.
Yes. On April 17th. And then I'll be officially fully vaccinated. But
I got number one yesterday.
Did you? Oh, nice. A lot of my friends are actually getting number one today, actually. I do know that at least in my opinion, where WWE was kind of delaying how many seats they were going to have and this and that, it really dictates the whole business of the week and weekend for the non-WWE properties. And I think by them kind of holding out when they were going to sell and how many tickets were going to sell, I think it hurt the business of the independent shows and the conventions that are still going to run. I mean, I have not seen no event this year that wasn't scheduled for last year. Like you know, or vice versa. Like, it's going to be interesting to see attendance figures for all those shows that are running and conventions. Mm-hmm.
Sure will be. And then from there.
All right. So, then from there, we're going to change things up and go to All Elite Wrestling. And you have an interesting topic that you want to explore here that we discussed. The female well, first start with this. Is Kenny Omega chasing away viewers as we have a 700,000 viewer mark for this past Wednesday night? Is Kenny Omega the cause of that, Brandon?
Now, I have to warn you, Chris Gall. If you end up doing more of these WrestleNomics radio episodes and you become further associated with the WrestleNomics brand, just to warn you, you may have your Twitter mentions flooded with with various people, individuals, many of them anonymous, who have strong opinions and look to the data to affirm those opinions. The philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche once said, you can stare into the abyss long enough that eventually it stares back at you. And you can stare at the spreadsheets, or they don't look at the spreadsheets in all likelihood. You can stare at the graphs and the charts and the tables that I tweet, and eventually you can see them staring back at you and telling you, yes, Kenny Omega is an anti-draw. And then you will quote tweet me, and I will have many enthusiastic notes to read as the night goes on whenever I tweet these ratings updates. Just in this ratings talk, it's interesting that AEW is down to this extent. And maybe that has something to do with the Revolution pay-per-view. And I think what the ending of that main event meant to the brand, and that the explosion that didn't come off as well as it was supposed to. But I think people think that wrestling economics, you know, there's a lot of micro analysis of viewership that I see. And I think people think that, you know, these sort of numbers, you can look at them like stocks, if you were doing day trading or something, as if, you know, day trading actually worked for anyone except for like the firms that have the most sophisticated supercomputers. But I think in wrestling, like in real investing, short-term investment almost never works. And, you know, people think that in wrestling, you can prove or disprove the success of something in the course of a single night's creative. You can prove the success of some star or some angle or some program in the course of a single night's creative and in the course of, you know, 1 week or a few weeks, viewership numbers. And I think there's people inside the business at every level that are kind of use that kind of thinking, not just the quote tweeters. But I think they think that like a higher number validates the program and a lower number invalidates it. But it's muddier than that. And I think relying on that line of thinking will reduce a company to a business that sells nothing but short-term highs and that needs sort of ever more potent short-term highs over time in order to get high again, to cause any effect to their business positively. Gradually, you know, the sort of the old gimmicks and the legends and angles that you do become less and less effective when you rely on that sort of strategy. And whether it's the absurdist comedy of modern US indie wrestling that gets a lot of interaction on Twitter, and you can see the numbers, the views, the video views right there, you can see how many retweets it gets. But I'm not sure that it sells tickets so well. Or even if we're talking on a higher level, the absurdist gimmickry and the worship of nostalgia that WWE and even AEW rely on sometimes, that too. And the temptation to use that kind of stuff is strong, because you can immediately see some sort of result from that, whether it's a social media engagement number or whether it's we popped a number on Legends Night in January. Look, it was the highest rating we had in X number of months. So the numbers are there. And you can point to that short-term high and say, see, this is a draw. We brought Hogan back. and he's a draw. And the alternative, which is, you know, maybe these younger wrestlers who, you know, I'm not sure about, you might otherwise invest time and energy in them, but they don't seem to be the ones who can pop that number like Hulk Hogan can, or like Masala can, when, you know, you got Mara Fuji as your champion, but the houses are falling. And, but, you know, we put the belt back on Masala and we're drawn again, at least for a little while. But I think that's, you know, that's a false economy. Popping a rating one time isn't that hard. All it takes is hot-shotting the return of some legends.
I was waiting for that word hot-shot in the territory. That's what I was waiting for, yeah, that phrase.
You know, getting a bunch of retweets and likes is great, and it has a certain amount of value, and you can make funny memes that people love to share, and that gets spread around a lot. But does that make people more likely to hang on to a video subscription or to become a loyal viewer of your program? Or does the alternative sell more tickets? It's hard to create long-term interest and to do the things that are, I think required to create long-term interest and to build stars, because that takes discipline. It's something in wrestling, patience, that we're not necessarily taught to have. We're taught to get like instant reactions and react to them. You know, wrestling, I think, is a long-term business, and it takes time and sacrifice and patience and trust in your talent to truly create stars. It takes little or no return on that investment. It takes waiting that out for months or maybe a year or more until it pays off. For many decision makers and wrestlers too, we are tempted by this sort of quick high and this high calorie, low nutrient burst of energy that revs you up for an hour, but it leaves you crashing pretty soon. When you could have spent that time investing more energy on something that would have benefited you more in the long run. So the alternative seems like a gamble, and it is, but is it really a bigger gamble than, you know, relying on, I don't know, the return of legends or hotshotting stuff or doing cool angles that eventually mean less and less? The business has relied on legends, frivolity, and irony for about a decade, and I'm sure it's protected everybody's ego, but in the meantime, the products of many companies, including WWE, have gotten less popular. It's a false economy, and I think it's one of the real persistent challenges that wrestling faces, is that you have to make long-term investments, and it seems like those long-term investments aren't immediately paying off, and it's easy to abandon them, and it's easy to go and rely on the pat hand again. But the latest, I don't know, topic of interest is, so this is interesting because Kenny Omega is obviously on AEW, but he's also been making some very short appearances on Impact Wrestling. And the viewership, the female viewership for, and this doesn't just, this just doesn't concern Kenny Omega, but the AEW program overall. The female, so we have various demographics. We don't have every imaginable demographic to discuss here, but we do have female 18 to 49 for one thing to look at. And female viewership 18 to 49 for AEW has declined since the new year. I'm probably going to put out a notebook for patron subscribers at patreon.com/WrestleNomics, which will include a chart that will illustrate what I'm talking about here. But F18 to 49 has declined since the new year. Showbiz Daily also reports the F12 34, which is a much smaller sample, probably just because it's a smaller audience. And that, for whatever it's worth, has appeared to decline as well since the new year. But Kenny Omega is also appearing on Impact, and let's just discuss that first. Is AEW's involvement with Impact coinciding with a decrease in viewership, or if not a decrease in viewership overall, a decrease in female viewership? And the answer is generally no, but there's something interesting happening in the last 2 weeks. So in F18 to 49, viewership is down to 1,000 on the 23rd and 4,000 on the 30th. Throughout February and the first part of March, it was up to 14,000, 8,000, 23,000, 15,000, 10,000, 16,000. Again, last 2 weeks, 1,000 and 4,000 So female viewership 18 to 49 has declined the last 2 weeks. So that's interesting. Again, as we get to these programs that have lower and lower viewership, the volatility, I think, increases because the samples become lower. You know, the samples that we're using to project these actual numbers get smaller, so the numbers become more volatile. But anyway, in terms of, let's talk about Impact Wrestling, this involvement with AEW. How has Impact Wrestling's involvement with AEW affected its viewership? If we go to monthly averages, which we can do for March now, because March is now ended. March was not a good month for Impact viewership. Let's talk about total viewership. 144,000 viewers averaged for March. That does not include the erroneous report from Showbiz Daily in the comments section of this past Tuesday, where they reported something well below 50,000 viewers for Impact. I think they were just referencing the Impact in 60 program that plays old matches that come on after Impact. But anyway, 144,000 viewers was the average in March for Impact. That is down substantially from February, where they were doing 172,000. that March number, though, is still higher than the November number, which is the month just before Kenny Omega started to show up and AEW people started to show up, which was in December. So November did 137,000 viewers on average. Again, this month in March, down, but not as bad as November. Now, throughout July, August, and September, AEW is doing 150,000 viewers or better on average. So that number in March is lower than that number in the summer. But it's not as if, they're definitely down. Now, we'll watch. And if in April this continues to decline, then I think we have a trend to observe. But I'm not seeing that yet. And so that's total viewership. But if we look at the advertising demographic of 18 to 49, even in this month of March, 47,000 viewers on average in 18 to 49, 47,000. And that's up substantially from any month, July, August, September, October, November. And it's down from December, January, and February, where they were doing 53,000, 58,000, 59,000. Again, down to 47,000. But that's still higher than July, August, September, October, November, where they were doing 40,000, 43,000 at best, or into the 30,000s. So Impact has improved its younger viewership, it appears, coinciding with this time in which they've been interacting with AEW. What about female viewership, though? Female viewership is now at 10,000 in March, which is about where it was in the summer. It's interesting that these last 2 weeks have been so low in female viewership. Continue to monitor that. If there's information. By the way, this is information that's not reported by Showbiz Daily that I was able to get a hold of. So we'll see. I don't know that I can always get this kind of information, but that's the story. Now, I've got quarter hour viewership in here as well. So when I look at the quarter hour viewership, I think is hard to read and it's opaque. Minute by minute viewership would be better, but I don't see when the AEW segments come on. That the viewership is declining worse than it normally would in the same position. So I'll put that in the notebook too, so everybody can see that sort of. It's not every week of the new year, but it's most weeks since the new year that I have quarter hour viewership for with labels saying this is what was in the segment, and I have times showing where the segment changes to something else. But I don't see. Now you can make some sort of larger macro argument about how AEW's presence on the show is minimizing the star power and importance of the Impact brand and the associated stars because AEW is coming in here and sort of big timing everybody. You can make some sort of argument along those lines. And then you could argue that that's what's contributing to the lower viewership here in March. But it's not as if you see this instant reaction in the viewership pattern.
So I think it for Impact, you talked about the overall ratings in the summer were for the most part pretty good. And I think that was the time that all these WWE guys that were released could show up. They could show up. It's July. They could show up here in August, September. And then when the AEW deal happened, yes, Omega's there, but you saw the social media buzz. Oh, is Jon Moxley going to come wrestle Sami Callihan? Or are we going to see Jordan Grace and Thunder Rosa? Like all these dream matchups that the fans were like buzzing about, And none of it has come to fruition right now. It's just Omega and the Good Brothers pretty much having that back and forth. And Don Callis, it's one angle. And I think fans were kind of ready for that surprise factor of who can show up and impact. And when it didn't happen, they just kind of tuned it out.
And then from there.
All right. Yes. So we'll go back from Impact to AEW, and so we kind of talked about the female viewers. Do you think that the violent content is chasing away the female viewers?
So specifically about the Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa match, I don't think so. I know that female viewership for that match, as well as male viewership, grew as the match went on. Did the exploding barbed wire death match? Did something, even though that was on pay per view, obviously not on Dynamite. Did something about that turn some people off, including female viewers? I don't know. But if you look at the showbiz numbers for the last several weeks, it has gradually declined since the new year, which I said earlier. But I don't know that there's evidence yet that female viewership is declining because of violent matches, although I'm sure there are anecdotes out there. Then we'll talk about Dynamite this week did a pretty low number, did 700,000 viewers, right? And it did a 0.26 in the demo, which is the lowest number that they have done since the January 6th episode, which of course is going up against a lot of news coverage of the Capitol being attacked. So that's pretty disappointing, I guess. The total viewership on that January 6th episode was 662, and that is the lowest since the new year. So this is the second lowest of the new year and the second lowest P18 to 49 viewership of the year. So it'll be interesting to see. I think on Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, the final night of the Wednesday Night Wars, it's going to be a takeover for NXT. So presumably they have a strong show. They have a lot of big matches to put on there. It'll be two nights, of course. So we could end the Wednesday Night War with NXT getting its first total viewership win in a long time since October 28th. Yes, I know that off the top of my head. The Halloween Havoc episode of NXT was the last time that NXT led in total viewers. Last time that NXT led in 18 to 49 aged viewers was, I believe, February 2020. So more than a year. So I would predict NXT probably beats AEW in the final night of the Wednesday Night Wars in total viewership. In P18 to 49, though, it would be tough, because this week, what did NXT do in 18 to 49 in terms of a rating? It did a 0.21 to AEW's 0.26. It could do it. It could do it. I don't know. Maybe a tie. I think that's tough to predict. NXT might beat them in both to close out the war, and then you could have this narrative that, yeah, see, we were about to take them over at that time, but the network, the politics being what it was, we had to let the NHL get in on there, and it was the best thing for our partners and so on and so forth. So,
well, we were trending to be overcome the ratings war. Speaking of ratings and viewership, Brandon, it's that time. It's, you can feel it in the air. It's WrestleMania time, right? It's when people kind of garner a little more interest towards wrestling with a common fan and the media. And, people are just get more excited about, some people don't watch WWE all the year long. And then they start tuning in January, February, March, leading into WrestleMania to see what's going on. Do you think, with it being WrestleMania time, does that generally grow viewership? And I know you got the stats for me.
You would think. January to March, in a lot of the comparisons that we do for the information that's been made available through WSICC filings, when it comes to things like attendance and maybe other consumer sales, it's important to do sort of quarterly comparisons rather than, compare Q1 of this year to Q1 of last year, rather than make like a Q1 versus Q4, because there is a seasonal effect to WWE's business. And you would think that in the lead up to the biggest event of the year by far, WrestleMania, that there would be an increase in viewership as that event approaches. And maybe that's the reason why AEW had a low number this week, is because, you know, viewership was down because WrestleMania is coming up and people are just more interested in WWE at this time. Viewership for NXT is up this year, and that's for sure. So I did some tables here, which I will put in the Patreon notebook as well. So I sort of asked the question, how often was viewership up from the prior week? And I asked that for all the programs that we have information on. And I did this across three demos: total viewership, 18 to 49 age viewers, and the younger 18 to 34 age viewers. And what I see at the moment, so I took from February 1st to the last week before WrestleMania. And we're not quite there in 2021, but we're almost there. So NXT is the only program that's showing that kind of growth, where more often than not, they are up from the prior week. And that's only in 18 to 49 and 18 to 34. So that's not even true for NXT in the case of total viewers. About a third of the time, total viewership is up from the prior week for NXT. But for 18 to 49, it's up more than 50%. For 18 to 34, it's up more than 15%. But that's not the case for Raw or for SmackDown, although viewership has held pretty steadily for Raw and for SmackDown during this time. So I'm not seeing that for Raw, for SmackDown, but I am seeing it for NXT. But what about Impact? Impact is down in 18 to 34, but they don't seem to be down that bad in total viewership from week to week. So what about 2020? Did viewership grow as WrestleMania approached in 2020? It grew for SmackDown. Total viewership did. But for everybody else, it was, less than 50%, but more than 33%. So basically, it's sometimes it did, but not that often. And AEW Dynamite did decline more often than not last year as WrestleMania approached. So maybe there's something to that. But in years before, so if we go to 2019, if I have it on here, which I don't, but in 2018, nobody grew more often than not on a week-to-week basis for Raw, SmackDown, or Impact even, which we have total viewership numbers for in 2018, not 2019, not in those dark pursuit days. We don't have any of those numbers. The conclusion I take from this is that viewership doesn't always consistently grow as WrestleMania approaches, which you would intuitively think is the case. It's not a runaway conclusion where you're like, oh yeah, WrestleMania is here and look out, because the interest just rises and rises as WrestleMania approaches. That doesn't seem to be what happens. So I don't know.
All right.
Chris Scola, what have you got coming up?
So the next rediscovering indies, the next part, we do once a month, so the next episode will be released in a few weeks, but it's part two of our XPW deep dive. And believe me, there's a lot to cover here. Interesting thing that you would be interested in, Brandon, that we covered in the first part of the episode was Rob Black running the Los Angeles Sports Arena that fit 17,000 people, and he drew on average 1,200. So, and he ran it three times in 2000. So, yeah, so... if he had WrestleNomics back then, he would probably realize that probably wouldn't have been the best idea. But I do thank everybody who are listeners of this show. We did get some social media mentions and people saying, checking out the show. So thank you guys for listening to us. And that's awesome. Like I said, and follow social media, because every day you get a This Day in Independent Wrestling History. As we are recording right now, Brandon, did you know that in 1993... Don Morocco defeated the Sandman to win the Eastern Championship Wrestling Heavyweight title?
No, I did not know that. That's the precursor to ECW Eastern Championship Wrestling, right?
Yes, it is.
Interesting. Where can they follow you, Chris Gull?
You can follow me at on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, all at Chris Gull. Nothing added there. As far as my other podcasts, RTI Pod on Twitter, the Instagram and Facebook is just Rediscovering the Indies, all spelled out with no spaces.
You can get the notebook to various charts and notes that I mentioned on this podcast, as well as access to the WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet. You can get access to that for just $5 a month at patreon.com/WrestleNomics. You can follow WrestleNomics at WrestleNomics. You can follow me at Brandon Thurston, and we'll talk to you, everybody.